Okay, folks, we seem to have a CD problem here. But anyway, welcome to the Illinois World Labor Hour. The views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. I'm your host, David Johnson, here with co-host Tom Thomas, who will be having our cultural corner poem today. Actually, he's going to have, I believe, two, correct?
I've got two of them this week.
Yes, and our technical advisor and co-host, Bob Plesney. And anyway, we've got a special two-hour show today. In the first half, we've got Marty Conless from Chicago, from Labor Beat Television, live here in the studio, to talk about a recent trip he made to Japan with Labor Beat. And in the second half of the hour, we're going to be having Dave P. and somebody from the Catholic Worker House talking about the recent Tent City confrontation with the city of Champaign and the Champaign Police Department. So anyway, stay tuned to the show. But in the meantime, Tom, we have some underwriting announcements.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates the voice of labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO, Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And finally, this hour of programming is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by Fat City Bar and Grill. Open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. every day, serving lunch and dinner and different daily drink specials. Fat City is located at 505 South Chestnut in Champaign at the northeast corner of Neal and Green behind Hollywood Video. Their number is 607-0614. On Saturday, July 18th, Renegade Southern Rock Country Band will play live at Fat City. That's today, Saturday, July 18th.
Dave? Okay, thank you, Tom. And as I said, we have a special guest in the show here, and we're going to be getting to him real shortly here. But in the first part here, I think I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to reverse the order a little bit today. I'm going to go right to Workers Independent News, and then we'll be back with some local headlines. Okay, we're back now with some local in-house radio news stories. We'll start with Tom.
The FutureGen Alliance project is intended to produce gas from coal, burying or sequestering the carbon emissions permanently deep underground. The plan is expected to cost more than $2 billion, but over the years will generate hundreds of construction jobs and dozens, if not scores, of permanent positions. The U.S. Department of Energy last Tuesday issued its Record of Decision that formally clears the way for forward planning by the FutureGen Alliance, said Energy Secretary Stephen Chu in a statement. This step forward demonstrates the Obama administration's commitment to developing clean energy technologies, creating jobs, and reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. The Record of Decision is a final public decision that certifies the site meets environmental requirements for the project. Tuesday's action also reiterated the importance of FutureGen as the only clean coal project in the United States which holds the potential to revolutionize our coal industry and effectively address the challenges of global warming.
Okay. After nearly 5 months of negotiations, AT&T said Wednesday it reached a tentative deal with the Communication Workers of America on a new labor contract for nearly 18,500 wireline employees in five Midwest states. However, discussions at four other regional tables still are pending. Union members in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin now will vote to ratify or reject the agreement, which includes an almost 9% compounded wage increase over the life of the three-year deal and union concessions on the issue of health care. A final tally of votes will be counted August 7th. If approved, AT&T's deal with union leaders in its Midwest region will result in increased out-of-pocket costs for health care, an issue that the CWA touted as its main concern during negotiations. AT&T has said that CWA members currently pay about 8% of their costs of their health care, and that such a business model would be unsustainable for the company moving forward. And that wraps up that story.
Okay. Story I got next is Democrats stab unions in the back on Employee Free Choice Act. Actually, the title is Democrats Drop Key Part of Bill to Assist Unions by Steve Greenhouse from the New York Times. Half dozen senators friendly to labor decided to drop a central provision of a bill that would have made it easier to organize workers, the so-called car check provision, which, by the way, happens to exist in every industrialized country in the world except the United States, which senators decided to scrap to help secure a filibuster-proof 60 votes, would have required employers to recognize a union as soon as a majority of workers sign cards saying they wanted a union. Currently, employers can insist on a secret ballot elections, a high hurdle for unions. The abandonment of card check was another example of the power of certain corporate Democrats to constrain their party's more labor-friendly legislative efforts. Though the Democrats have a 60-40 vote advantage in the Senate and President Obama supports the measure, several Democrats oppose the card check provisions as quote-unquote undemocratic. In its place, several Senate and labor officials said the revised bill would require shorter unionization campaigns and faster elections. While disappointed with the failure of card check, union leaders argued this would still be an important victory because it would give companies less time to press workers to vote against unionizing. Some business leaders hailed the dropping of card check, while others call the move a partial triumph because the bill still contained provisions they oppose. Several corporate Democrats, including Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, which happens to be the home of Walmart, have voiced opposition to card check, convinced that elections were a quote-unquote fair way for workers to organize. They were swayed partly by businesses' vigorous campaign, arguing that card check would remove confidentiality from unionization drives and enable union organizers to quote-unquote bully workers into signing cards. Union leaders argue that under current law, though, unionization elections are often unfair because they say employers have a huge opportunity to intimidate and pressure workers during the lengthy campaigns that precede the unionization vote.
The owner of Champaign television station WICD-TV, Channel 15, reported last week that it could be forced into bankruptcy if a smaller station operator it does business with defaults on its debt. The Cunningham Broadcasting Corporation faces a July 31st deadline on $34 million in debt held by three different banks. If the company can't come to terms with its lenders, it could trigger a default at Sinclair as well. The disclosure adds a new twist to an already shaky financial picture for the Sinclair Group, which is facing a dismal year for advertising. The recession and the shift of media consumers to the Internet have combined to put a large dent in their revenues. In a securities filing last week, Sinclair said it is preparing for a possible bankruptcy filing should their creditors force the company to file. Sinclair, a Baltimore-based company that owns 58 TV stations in 35 markets, is caught in an industry-wide advertising slump that has shown little sign of abating. The research firm BIA Advisory Services has forecast that television advertising revenues nationwide will fall as much as 20% this year.
Okay, unemployment topped 10% in 15 states and the District of Columbia last month, according to federal data released Friday. The rate in Michigan surpassed 15%, the first time any state hit that mark since 1984. Home to the nation's struggling automakers, Michigan has been clobbered by lost factory jobs. Its jobless rate of 15.2% in June was the highest in the country. Last time it was anywhere that high was 1984, was in West Virginia. And the 14 other states where unemployment topped 10% last month were Alabama, California, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Nevada, North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And in Illinois, it was 10.3% in June. That was an increase of 0.2% since May.
Okay. First, there was boss snapping. Now, angry workers at a factory in France have come up with a new tactic in their battle against mass layoffs. Staff at bankrupt car parts maker New Fabry are threatening to blow up the plant if they did not receive compensation from the company they provided most of the firm's businesses. The 336 workers at the factory of Chéronneau near Pointière in central France wants Renault SA and PSA Peugeot Citroën to pay $25,000 to each of them, or some $10 million in total, in return for the company's remaining stocks of equipment and machinery. The workers who are currently occupying the factory have given Renault and Peugeot Citroën until July 31st to come up with the money. Guy Eiderman, a CGT trade union official, told France Info Radio, quote, "The bottles of gas have already been placed at various parts of the factory and are connected with each other. If Renault and PSA refuse to give us that money that we are owed, it could blow up before the end of the month." A delegation of workers will meet officials from Renault on Thursday. Both Renault and the police declined to comment. New Fabrius went into liquidation in April, which means the workers are unlikely to get any type of unemployment money. The industrial unrest is the latest in a series of radical responses to the financial crisis early this year. Staff from at least eight companies took their managers hostage in return for demands such as proper jobs, better pay, and fewer layoffs.
In the words of President Barack Obama, community colleges are an undervalued asset to our country. Last week, President Obama proposed a $12 billion investment in the nation's two-year colleges to help train millions of unemployed people for jobs he says will be created once the economy turns around. Obama flew to Michigan, the state with the worst unemployment rate in the country at 14.1%, to make the announcement at Macomb Community College. He called the $12 billion in spending over the next decade the most significant down payment yet toward achieving his goal of having the highest college graduation rate of any other nation in the world. Speaking outdoors in his shirt sleeves, Obama said that jobs requiring at least an associate's degree are expected to grow in number twice as fast as those where a four-year college education is not required.
Okay, I've got another story here. It says more than 500 staff at the Kimlayo District Express Radio in Japan are expected to be trained to daily face scans by quote-unquote smile police bosses. A smile scan software developed by the Japanese company Omron produces a sweeping analysis of a smile based on facial characteristics from lip curves and eye movements to wrinkles. After scanning a face, the device produces a rating between 0 to 100, depending on the estimated value of the fulfilled potential of a person's biggest smile. For those with a below-par smile, one of an array of smile-boosting messages will opt on the computer screen, ranging from "You still look too serious to lift up your mouth corners," according to Marichi Daily News. A growing number of service industries are reportedly using the new Omron smile scan system for quote-unquote smile training among staff. Workers at the Keihan Electrical Express Railway will receive a printout of their daily smile, which they will expect to keep with them throughout the day to require them to smile at all times, the report added. Well, Big Brother, welcome to the New World Order.
Hey, work on the Boneyard Creek Detention Basin Project could begin within the next few weeks following City Council approval of two contracts last week. O'Neill Brothers of Urbana was awarded a $10.7 million contract to construct two below-grade detention basins, which will be located just west of 2nd Street between University and Springfield Avenues. O'Neill Brothers submitted the lowest bid of four bidders, with their bid coming in at $3.5 million lower than the engineer's estimates. Work on the project is expected to take around 18 months to complete, and will keep a number of workers employed for that period of time. The council also approved hiring Foth Infrastructure and Environmental LLC of Champaign for $680,000 to provide engineering services on the project. When it's completed, the basin work will provide at least 100 years of flood protection through Campus Town and from Scott Park north to University Avenue.
Okay, Walter Cronkite, who personified television journalism for more than a generation as anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, has died Friday in New York. He was 92 years old. Known for his steady and straightforward delivery, his trim mustache, and his iconic sign-off line, "That's the way it is," Cronkite dominated the television news industry during one of the most volatile periods of American history. He broke the news of the Kennedy assassination, reported extensively on Vietnam and civil rights and Watergate, and seemed to be a very embodiment of television journalism. Cronkite Cronkite came to be sort of a personification of his era. He became kind of a meager figure of his time. At one time, his audience was so large and his image so credible that a 1972 poll determined he was, quote, the most trusted man in America, surpassing even the president, vice president, members of Congress, and all their journalists. In a time of turmoil and mistrust after Vietnam and Watergate, the title was a rare feat, and the label seemed to stick. And it's interesting that in 1968, Walter Cronkite returned from visiting Vietnam and declared on television, quote, it seems now more certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is a stalemate. President Lyndon Johnson, on hearing that, reportedly said, quote, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost America. Not long after that, Johnson declared his intention not to run for re-election.
The ExxonMobil Corporation is making its first major investment in greenhouse gas-reducing biofuels, announcing a $600 million partnership with a California biotech company. ExxonMobil and Synthetic Genomics said last week that they will work together to develop fuels for transportation from algae. ExxonMobil has been criticized for some time now for not spending enough to explore alternative energy options. This in spite of growing and record-breaking profits. One of ExxonMobil's requirements was finding a biofuel source that could be produced on a relatively massive scale. Photosynthetic algae is a very viable candidate, and if produced en masse, could limit, if not completely dispense, with our reliance on foreign oil.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Okay, that was Talking Union, and that was done back in the 1930s, if you couldn't tell from the recording. But there was some good timely message and information there. But I'd like to welcome our guest again to the radio. Welcome back to the Only World Labor Hour, Marty. Marty Collins from Chicago and Labor Beat.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. It's always a pleasure. I want to get you back here because you actually went to Japan for a while back, and was that in June?
That was in May. Okay. I was invited from Genko, which is the peace group in Japan, and Japan Peace TV, along with Sana TV from Baghdad. For your listeners, I'm a reporter with Labor Beat in Chicago, Labor Beat Cable Access TV, laborbeat.org, if you want to look it up. And we have like 100 videos on social justice, labor, demonstration-type videos up on YouTube or Google or Blip TV, if you want to search any of those. So I've been doing it for about 16 years, and for the last 6 years, since labor doesn't seem to have too many exciting stories, I've been getting into the anti-war movement with my videos, doing a lot of anti-war work. And through that way, I was invited as a guest by Japan TV to Peace TV, Japan Peace TV, to go to this film festival against war and poverty throughout Japan with Mr. Salek Al-Jabbar from Baghdad, Iraq. So it was a pretty exciting trip.
Oh, wow. What a that's quite interesting. I mean, a labor journalist from the U.S., a journalist from Iraq, and then going to Japan here, right, being invited, actually. Now, can you talk a little about the alternative television currently in Japan?
Well, they don't have anything like cable access that we just take so for granted in this country. So in a couple cities, this is a five-city tour. Well, it was actually seven, but I made it for five for personal reasons. But in two places, I had to explain what cable access was, right, you know. And I've learned, too, that just 9 years ago, the Australian people forced cable access on their television companies. Interesting, you know, that something we take for granted, the Australians actually forced it through. But Japan don't have cable access concept of public community TV, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so their internet TV, Japan Peace TV, is an internet type of channel where you get your first video free, but then their catalog only belongs to you if you're a subscriber. So okay. They exist on micro donations, which I found to be pretty interesting.
Okay, all right.
So, and Sana TV, which is from Baghdad, is a satellite type of TV. So the three of us got together in these concepts and pushed forward this anti-war video concept because, let's face it, here in America, we don't get any images of Baghdad, of Iraq. We don't get any images of the destruction. We have not seen one dead Iraqi, one injured Iraqi. So I met Mr. Salek in Okinawa, and we got stuck in traffic on the way to the university. Can't really talk. Goes from Arabic to Japanese to English to Japanese back to Arabic, you know, so it's all kind of uneasy. And an hour and a half later, I'm sitting watching his 15-minute video of these people living in a garbage dump within sight of the green zone.
Within sight of the green zone.
Oh, in sight, okay. The camera turns, and you can see the walls, the whole green, and these people. The translator that was with me was saying, you know, translating for me as I'm watching his video. I was mortified. This woman says, I was a nurse. 6 years ago, I was a nurse. I've been living in this garbage dump. Look at me. And you had to say, these people were living in a garbage dump. This is not cartoon land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? These are the images that Mr. Salek brought with him. And each time he showed a new one of his little 10-minute videos, it was absolutely tough to take. So then I had to watch this video, and then I had to get up and talk, and it was kind of difficult, you know. But anyway, we got along famously, Mr. Salek and myself, because we're both there's a lot more identifiable between us than Iraq and American. You know, we come up with 100 things before we reach that, and we are videographers first. And when I said goodbye to him, the last two general managers of Sana TV are missing, presumed dead. One of them was his uncle.
Oh.
So he goes back to a situation for doing the same kind of work. He may be killed. I'm under these civil rights lawsuits now in Chicago put my press freedom at stake, all of our press freedom at stake. So I got to come back and deal with a pesky lawsuit, but I'm not getting killed for our efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And so he earned my respect right away.
How long is Sana TV? I mean, just a little bit on the background of Sana TV. When did it start? Shortly after the invasion occupation? Or
I believe they've been around, but I think they took a boost from Japan TV, Peace TV, and Zenko.
Mm-hmm.
Raised quite a bit of money for them to get them up on the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And they're an extension of Iraqi Freedom Congress, which is a group of secular... I know a lot of trade unions involved,
mm-hmm.
and so they're kind of worked together on that.
And do they get harassed and shut down all the time? Or?
Yeah, six times the United States Army has busted into their offices and destroyed their equipment,
what?
Computers.
But I thought we were there for to bring freedom to the Iraqi people.
Yeah, I know. And so we are having a labor beat, myself and... A lot of media people are up at Chicago and have a big fundraiser for them August 14th.
Okay.
Show some of their videos and things like that. So if you go on Chicago Indie Media, perhaps you'll see the announcement very soon.
Do you know the location of that at this point, August 14th?
The UE Hall.
The UE Hall, okay.
The UE Hall at Ashland and Monroe anybody in town.
Okay, very good. That sounds like something definitely worthwhile to go up. And August 14th, that's
Friday night.
It's a Friday night, right. Okay. Okay, very good. Well, I'm going to definitely try to make that up and everything. Well, okay, that's... Wow, just the background of this trip to Japan is fascinating. But why don't you talk a little bit about what you did there, sort of your itinerary, if not nothing else.
Right. Well, I stayed out in Okinawa with a good professor, Nobu, there from Okinawa University Peace Studies, and addressed their youngsters. Sort of college, just like any other college campus kind of youngsters, you know. And so we got quite a bit of tour of Okinawa, the relationship between Japan and China, and go into that. But one thing we learned on our first dinner together was the tactics that the Americans used in World War II were exactly the same that were used in Baghdad. They call it the Iron Shield. And for 3 months, the destroyers and battleships bombarded Okinawa for three straight months, 24 hours a day before their invasion. And then their invasion was actually, they told me, larger than Normandy, which I didn't realize. And the occupation still occurs with the American air bases in Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then also when they got there, they raided the castle of the Ryaduki, I believe, kingdom, which was the Okinawan kingdom,
mm-hmm.
raided their old treasures. Sounds also familiar. We figured that out, me, the Iraqi, and the Japanese people. We figured out that the tactics... are technically better, but they're still the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever happened to all those art treasures from Baghdad and all the other museums? You
right.
know, that's I think that could be a speculation quite a speculation, actually, considering the U.S. control all the land and air routes out of Iraq.
Right. So I learned a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And we went and visited Butte some air bases and a few other spots about that. And then we talked to quite a few newspapers. We're on television in Okinawa. And then we flew to Osaka the next day, where we had a press conference with the three major dailies. And that was pretty exciting. And mind you, I've never done this kind of thing before, right? You know, so it's pretty heavy for me. Mm-hmm. And then we went on to Hiroshima, and really incredible day touring the Hiroshima Peace Museum with a gentleman from Baghdad. I don't know. I don't know many Americans who have ever done that before. And that was real good. And we addressed maybe in Hiroshima 10 or 15 like long-term peace activist type people there. And that was that whole day was pretty heavy. And
are there Japanese troops still in Iraq? I remember there was a contingent sent there as like some kind of civil engineers or something.
I believe they. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You have to look, but I believe they've been withdrawn. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Zhenko, the peace group, is like a few steps ahead of Americans, and we got to realize that Japanese was a demilitarized zone, forced to from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't until Reagan and a few of these other people pushed some of these, like standing at attention for the graduation, the war songs, they call it, national anthem and all that. It's a pretty recent phenomenon.
Really?
In the 80s, the government forced these songs to be sung and played at school functions and things like that. So mm-hmm. there's a sizable amount of teachers that refuse to stand for the war songs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's how Japan Peace TV tied up at Labor Beat. Is our work at Sen High School up in Chicago to stop the military academies being forced on the Chicago public school communities. And so that's how they're a little ahead of us on this. In fact, when we got to Osaka, which was the main film festival, then I really felt that the Japanese Teachers Union was quite represented there among the peace people. There was about 300 people at this conference. And the motto of the Japanese Teachers Union, formed after World War II, is "Never again will we send our children to the battlefield."
Oh wow!
Okay, so I asked them to send a letter to that effect to Marilyn Stewart, our teachers union up in Chicago. She certainly needs it because they're not doing much to stop the military academies being forced on the children there. And
she's with AFT, I take it, or
Chicago Teachers Union. I don't know who that. But anyway, okay. So that's yeah. So the film festival in Osaka really floored me because I wasn't prepared for this in the mental sense of walking into a room with a couple hundred people. And they really wanted to hear about counter-recruitment. And Aaron Hughes was our feature in the Labor Beat Film Festival set up where Mr. Salek had the morning and he showed and he did it in the afternoon. Our feature was Aaron and Erbil, which is on Blip TV, if you want to search for it. Aaron Hughes is a Iraq veteran against the war person, and he went back to a trade union conference in Erbil, Iraq, and in his presentation, he apologized to the Iraqi people and took responsibility for pointing weapons at their families. And we at Labor Beat thought it was an incredibly important story, and had it videoed, cut, edited on our radio show and on the internet within a week, and on our TV show within 2 weeks. And an American soldier going back to a war zone and apologizing to the people, I don't know how much that happens, but we can't push this story anywhere, okay? So, but the Japanese caught it right away. So it was their feature, and so that led me into how counter-recruitment is going on. IVAW has a very ambitious plan up in Chicago to put a counter-recruiter in every high school in the Chicago public school system. In fact, they're having a conference this weekend up there about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that work the Japanese really wanted to know about. And that talk went over real well there in Osaka.
Wow, that's just fascinating. It's, supporting, a lot of people my question how, you know, anti-war issues is a labor issue, but we got to understand something, that money spent for these foreign wars oftentimes go to oppress workers, like it's been doing in Iraq. The only law they left on the books from the Saddam era was the law prohibiting unions. And Aaron, when he was down here talking at one of our people's potluck, I think it was back in March, mentioned about his job, he, when he was there, was basically guarding these workers, indentured workers brought in from South Asia, mainly from Bangladesh and other places, to basically work for Kellogg Brown and Root and these other big American companies at rates less than what the Iraqis would demand to work the same work. And his job was to guard them, basically stop them from running off. I mean, it was incredible. It was incredible.
Right. And, you know, Dave, I'm a working electrician, and American military bombed one of the finest electrical grids in the world in Baghdad, bombed the heck out of it. And now people are, it's going to be a point in this world where electricity is going to be a civil right. You take your electricity away, you are doing them a human right grievance there. And, you know, most riots in this world are about food for one thing, but a lot of them are about electricity. And that was the finest designed, as I understand it, grid system, underground grid system in Baghdad, gone, kaput. So as an electrician, knowing what it takes to put in there, my labor's is not very well appreciated.
Yes, indeed. And
so that's why I'm that's why, to me, doing this anti-war work is labor, is labor reporting.
You know, of course, this has been controversial within labor going, you know, for years. Of course, the AFL-CIO was under George Meany, was full supporters of the Vietnam War, and yet Walter Reuther of the United Auto Workers opposed it and pulled out of the AFL-CIO for a while. But going back to the First World War, I mean, there was a big, I mean, Eugene Debs went to prison because he advocated that workers should not be fighting the wars of the capitalist class. And, you know, so this is an issue, and it does affect us here domestically. All these wars for you know, corporate empire expansion, which is what they are, I'll debate that with anybody, but that takes away from resources here. It takes away from school funding. It takes away from health care. And so, yes, anti-war issues are labor issues because it affects us, the working class, more than it affects anybody.
And as labor reporters like we are, how about in Serbia where they bombed the TV station and killed the 22 people? I mean, it's freedom of the press, whatever. You know, come on. And nobody blinked. So now you now there's hundreds of independent journalists have died because of this Iraq war. Nobody blinks, thinks it's part of their job to go die.
Let's clarify who these reporters are. These aren't CBS and CNN embedded journalists. These are the independent journalists.
They know
out
exactly
there.
Who they're shooting. And why and who and why. And, you know, there are no accidents out there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Marty, we're going to take a little break here with our cultural corner segment here and Tom's poem this week. The first poem, I should say, of this two-hour program is How Far Away?
Billions of dollars on the way is what some politicians say. We'll bring thousands of jobs someday, and that day is how far away? To build the bridges and the roads, a workforce strong is awaiting. With their hunger and unpaid bills, they're tired of the debating. So many invisible dollars just cannot pay visible debts. Who will be in charge of the cold cash? Who will say whom the money gets? Do you reuse your paper towels because you simply can't afford to buy a roll that's fresh and clean since downward your wages have soared? We deserve a chunk of dollars. We each deserve to do our job to rebuild our busted nation and not a one of us be robbed. Maybe their promises are true, which nowadays is a rarity, and the money really is there soon to end our disparity. You can be sure the bosses know that back to work we're poised to go. And as soon as the cash they show, our dreams can all resume their flow. How Far Away was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on July 14, 2009, and was first recited live July 18, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much. And we've got some public service announcements here. I'd like to begin with a cookout and open house in the backyard of 317 South Randolph in Champaign, hosted by St. Jude Catholic Worker House in Safe Haven. That's a week from today, Saturday, July 25th at 3 p.m. Come for a neighborhood cookout and stay to meet the Safe Haven and St. Jude Catholic Worker communities, which we'll be talking about in the second half of the hour.
And you can help WEFT raise funds by joining us at the Savoy 16 Theater Monday, July 20th, between 6 and 10 p.m. Station representatives will be outside the box office to greet you and hand out an invitation, allowing you to donate 50% of your concession purchase to WEFT. That's a WEFT benefit on Monday, July 20th at the Savoy Theater from 6 to 10 p.m. And listener support for WEFT 90.1 FM comes in different ways. Support the programming you enjoy through our vehicle donation program by donating a car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you no longer need. If it has a title and runs, we will accept most donations. For more information about a tax-deductible contribution of your vehicle to WEFT Radio, call 1-877-308-2408. That's 1-877-308-2408.
WEFT is a co-sponsor of the third annual Nature's Table Reunion, live at the Iron Post in Urbana, Friday, July 24th. At 5 p.m., the Woody Woodward Organ Trio. At 7:30 p.m., Kevin Kaiser's tribute to Doc Scott. And at 10 p.m., Jeff Helgeson, Scott Frillman, Danny Deckard, and friends. For more information, visit www.naturestable.net. That's July 24th. Nature's Table Reunion, annual Nature's Table Reunion.
Okay, and the Illinois Green Party is having their statewide membership meeting. It's going on today, and today it's over in the Champaign Amtrak train station on the fourth floor, and it's going to continue through all day today and this evening, as well as going on tomorrow. And tomorrow it's going to be at the Eastland Suites Hotel and Conference Center, 1907 North Cunningham Avenue. But anyway, Rich Whitney, the candidate for governor who got 13% of the vote, is at this meeting, and he's going to be running again, I hear, for governor again. And anyway, there's going to be a lot of different workshops and stuff, and a lot of the ones they're going to be having today that sounded quite interesting were beyond the mainstream media, petitioning the Charlie Holloway Safe Haven Champaign's Tent City home energy efficiency basics, and some other really good workshops here. The Co-op Alternative, Transition Towns, Green Healthcare Solutions, and that's the one Rich Whitney is going to be talking about. So if you can make it today at the train station downtown Champaign on the fourth floor, and anyway, we're going to be playing a song here, and we'll be right back with Marty Conless.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Steve Earle, The Mountain, which is both a labor and an environmental song that we played. And we're back here with Marty Conless. Okay, Marty, so, man, it sounds like a really fascinating trip. Tell us what happened next.
The next, like I said, I was only over there 9 days, and it was all go, go, go. It really was. It was really a lot of travel. It was, these people worked for a solid year for this film festival before that. I wish I would have known a little more about that, what I was getting into. This was a big event for quite a few people. And I was really honored to be invited there, I realize now. And the film festival itself, International Film Festival Against War and Poverty. Like I say, in Osaka, there were a couple 300 people, and then it was later on in Kyoto, it was kind of redone with the same format with maybe 100 people on the final day. But they put out submissions, 3-minute submissions, and they got back a lot. Mostly 6 minutes. So you got to see how anybody who's ever do video, wants to have a video showing or presentation, knows that something's going to go wrong, you know? I mean, I've done video for many years now, but this thing went like clockwork. There was one little instance where they couldn't make the connection. So the video makers were there They would jump up and have 20 seconds to introduce their video, and the three-minute video would go, and then the next one would jump up. And it was really exciting, even with all the lack of English, let me put it that way. You really don't have to – you don't really need language when the human emotion, the human face is quite apparent. And one of the better videos there was about the Korean retail clerks that sat down in there. It was sort of a Walmart store. And it was like a 12-minute video. And when the they were there for 17 days, taking over their store, and well, when the 400 police come around the corner, it really doesn't have to be in English to see this great video work of arresting these women and hauling it, throwing them in the paddy wagon.
How many women were there occupying?
62, I believe. Yeah,
so that's a cop for every eight cops for every woman.
Retail
clerk.
Yeah,
wow.
They had enough of it, and. Yeah, it was an exciting video. But I found out that LaborBeat, although, or any kind of independent video maker out there, YouTube maker kind of thing, the Japanese aren't any better at it, or the Filipinos, Koreans, who else was in there? I mean, most of them were just little work complaint videos. They get fired and they go put their vest on and stand outside their office with a megaphone and yell out their injustice and people. You know, a lot of these videos were just they reminded me of old LaborBeat videos, where like people's grievances are going video-wise. So they really wanted to know how LaborBeat does all this, So it was very nice to be a representative of LaborBeat doing this for 22 years, how be appreciated. I mean, we can't even get on. We're hardly getting out in Peoria, Illinois, and here in Japan, they really took an interest in LaborBeat, and it was really interesting. It was quite honored to be there.
Okay. You had a problem in Peoria getting on the air?
No. I say all the time, it's difficult to get viewed by your own people, and in Japan they appreciate the work,
Okay. All right. Well, listen, that's a fascinating tour, and you said that you were there 9 days total and everything, and I could just see how that time would just fly by, especially from what you just told us you've done so far. I mean.
Right. And Kyoto was nice. It was a super farewell party, and, all those Japanese people were wonderful, no matter what, and all their smiles were genuine, regardless of what that earlier story was about. And they were great hosts, and they're really onto something. I think they're going to be a real key hinge through this Japanese peace movement, the American anti-war movement in Iraq, and Iraqi Freedom Congress. And the work they do. I'm very thrilled to be a part of it. And then I ended up, they kind of called me back to Tokyo because I missed I missed the first 2 days. And I had a nice talk with 30 people from the peace councils there. That went very well, too. You should have seen the looks on their faces when I told them that Chicago really doesn't want the Olympics. It was like the greatest astonishment that I've ever seen in a group of faces. And I said, you can have it. Tokyo, you can have it. And they were very confused about it. They had to explain all that to me.
Well, I'm sure it works a lot different in Japan than it does here. I mean, as we know, it devastates neighborhoods and sucks resources out of local government, despite all the corporate sponsors.
Right. So I had a wonderful day in Tokyo. So it was. I think it was a very important trip, and I think people should know about this. That the anti-war movement through United States Labor Against the War, other local peace groups, and it still exists. It's still on the move. It's still moving forward. To walk through Hiroshima with somebody from Baghdad, Iraq, was quite humbling. I'm just an American citizen. I just happen to be born here. I'm not responsible for everything, but it really makes you think of what we're doing to other people.
Well,
a government.
Yes, it amazes me that the majority of the people in this country are opposed to the war. And, I'm going to say it again. I thought we had an election, but I don't see anything changing in that regard. And, frankly, I don't. I'm really disappointed I haven't seen the mass mobilizations of people on the streets about this, because nothing's changing. The occupation of Iraq is still continuing. The war in Afghanistan is expanding even more.
They're not bringing soldiers home. They're just taking them from one war and putting them in another.
Yeah. Yes, and so our government, it seems like no matter who we elect as president or in the Congress for the most part, except for those 40 Democrats and one or two Republicans, they're not listening to us. And this is where media plays, I think, a key role, is because, frankly, what's happening here, the situation is we in the United States, we've got an iron curtain of information. Now, they used to, the iron curtain is a term, if you're not old enough to remember, was the division between the Eastern bloc and the West, which was a literal concrete wall and a fence and would restrict people's movements
the
and
Berlin
stuff.
Wall.
Yes. But we've got an iron curtain of information in this country with the dominance of the corporate media. People, I mean, it's amazing when I talk to people from Europe, they can see CNN, they can see even Fox, which they can't believe is even allowed to be on the air because it's so slanderous. But nevertheless, but we don't, I mean, how it's difficult for somebody here in the United States to see stuff from the European media, from Al Jazeera, from Telesur, the South American TV network, which, by the way, has been having some incredible coverage of the Honduran coup, which you hardly see any play on CNN about. Instead, we see Michael Jackson day and night for the last 24 hours. So my point, this long-winded point I'm trying to make here, is that your work is so important, Marty, and I am just so glad to hear that it sounds like it's went up a notch, and I'm hoping that we can take it to the next level here.
Well, I represent Labor Beat. You know, I just that's what I went over there to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't take any credit for it.
Well, but you should, because, I mean, you've been a great help here locally for Urbana Public Television Labor's View program.
When is that on, Dave?
Well, that is on Sundays from 4 to 5 p.m. Thank you for asking. And right now we're in summer reruns, but we're coming back on Labor Day weekend with a special show. It's going to be some live musicians in the studio doing some labor music, and then we're going to be continuing on with some hard-hitting reports on issues of the day that affect working people. And, of course, Labor Beat's going to be a part of that, as it's been last season.
Well, like we buried Walter Cronkite, we really should bury corporate news and get your news from these places that we're talking about. Satellite, mm-hmm. cable access, mm-hmm. internet. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, that's where I get our information. Well, so don't even give these people a view. Don't turn your TV on.
Well, I agree with that, because basically what information we are getting is, you know, first of all, a lot of it's blocked out and the rest of it's distorted.
It clouds your thinking.
Yes, yes. But you also, I just want to comment real quick. You've also got a blog called Escaped Wage Slave, and there's some great stories on there. I mean, you got some of your own writings, but you got links to some other great stories, which, in fact, we used two of those today. The one, the smile scan, and also Dave got that story. P got me the story about the French workers before you did, but nevertheless, you guys seem to be on parallel tracks here, which is good. But I just want to read the introduction to your blog, Escaped Wage Slave. I refuse to have a well-adjusted mind in a sick society. Slaves, I freed thousands of them. I would have freed thousands more if they knew they were slaves. And that's a quote from Harriet Tubman. If you can understand the above quotes, if they relate to your own situation in a daily soul-crushing, institutional tormenting, mean-spirited, co-worker, stressed-out employment condition, read on. And if you want to read on, you can go to Escaped Wage Slave /blogspot.com. And I tell you, it's really worthwhile. It's some really good articles, because these articles not only touch on sort of national, international labor issues, but deals with a lot of personal, how should I put it, how would you phrase it? You know, sort of like to help your soul, to help yourself to cope and to understand the problems we all face.
Right. Well, in March, I was on talking about workplace stress, I think,
at
the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could refer back in at Bob's great work of stream work and get that show. But, it's epidemic proportions, workplace stress in the society, and we act like it doesn't exist. You're mm-hmm. supposed to take it. You know, you're not supposed to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their limits.
Yeah, and this all ties in with, I think, other problems our society faces.
Oh, my God, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so anyway, Marty, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll definitely be getting you back. And again, let's talk about these events here, especially this one, this fundraiser for Sona TV. That was, again, August 14th.
Right, up in Chicago.
Okay, at the UE Hall.
At the UE Hall, and that's our first of many, we hope, of fundraisers to get Mr. Selleck equipment or money or whatever he needs, actually, right now. Mm-hmm. And also, you could look at our catalog at laborbeat.com. labeat.org, labeat.org, or also do your research for Japan TV, Japan Peace TV, Sana, S-A-N-A TV in Baghdad, and generally, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be down, what we call downstate.
Okay, well, you can certainly downstate south of I-80, of course, but that's okay. We're going to leave you with, I think, a very appropriate song that Bob just came up with, Frank Zappa, "On the Slime, Oozing from Your TV Set." Thanks again, Marty.
Nice to have another Zappa fan.
Okay.